without any.
Should we start?
You got enough?
We've got a quorum.
Good, that's all we need.
Okay, so we're good to go. Huh? Really wail on it, huh? Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone out and the staff out to the board members and our visitors. And here's Roger making his grand appearance.
We're late, sorry.
Right there, right next to Cecilia.
And here's Sue.
I know.
Can you get by okay?
Roger.
Okay, now we'll start. And we need to excuse Roger Pond, Patrick Jensen, and Craig Wright tonight. So we'll start off with the acceptance of the minutes and the approval of agenda. Is there anyone that'd like to make a motion to approve those?
I'm making the motion to reapprove the agenda and the minutes.
Thank you.
Point of clarification, you just need to add the brag.
Oh, the brag, okay, we're adding to the agenda down on number 8. Brag's coming to talk to us about senior companions.
We'll accept the agenda.
Okay, do I have a second?
I would second that motion.
Thank you. And are there any questions? Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you, we'll move on then. Next meeting is March 27th. And are there any questions and comments for the board? Nothing? Okay, we'll move on from there then. Let's see. Oh, Roger's here, so I can recognize Roger.
I do have a question.
Oh, you do?
What did you ever find out about the consent agenda? Do you know if that was ever researched?
Yeah, we're doing.
Are you going to come to that later?
No, we already did that last week.
No, but there was a question as to whether or not it was appropriate.
Oh, okay.
And Craig was going to look up something, and then we were going to look into the, public meeting requirements and everything else.
What I found, Lloyd, was that you're correct, that as long as a member of the board asks for something to be pulled, then it should be pulled out of the consent agenda.
I just wanted to
know. Yep.
Oh, okay.
That
point of procedure was correct.
That is correct from what I've been able to find.
Okay. Thank you.
Colin, you need to change the next month's meeting to March instead of February.
Okay. Oh, wait, no.
March 27th.
Yeah, it's March 27th.
Doesn't it say February?
That's today's meeting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the calendar is the same this year.
They're the same for February.
All right, I see.
All right.
I was looking at it as next month, sorry.
It's okay, it's the
same
day.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see, I guess I need to go up there. Then I don't like taking pictures.
Do it anyway.
I think it should. Why not? Do it.
She's got the Reader's Digest for
new board members will come and know the history of Cashaway Transit. Okay, he was appointed in 2007, a long time ago. Now, okay, during his time as a board member, we had the combining of Cashaway Transit and LTD. And the land for the future facility was purchased. Funding for hybrid buses was secured. Advertising was allowed on the buses at request of local businesses. And the transit center was expanded.
Did I help you all that?
You did.
Oh, wow. I'll take credit.
And his board chair, Winnie's board chair, CBTD, was recognized as the National Mid-Sized Urban System of the Year. And he's currently leading the way to discussion with CBTD and Box Elder County on transportation, getting it over the hill to them. So, you've always been professional and kind, and engaged board members, we started on the service committee until we disbanded that with the policy governance. And Norm has always been active and fearless and committed to what he did for the board. And we really appreciate that. Your questions have made us all think about all the things we should be doing, and your commitment to making sure everything right is right. And I think you've been a real asset. And good luck with your city council.
And keep doing that for the city of Nibley.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, he's also been on the PEP committee for a couple of years, too.
Yep. Yes, 2 years on the PEP committee. So.
No, I appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks for talking to us.
We appreciate it. Now you put that camera away.
You don't get to sit down yet, do you?
Don't I?
I don't know.
Yes, I do.
Who swears in the new people?
Oh, I don't. Nicole swears in the new. Yeah. Our new member is Gregory Shannon from Nibley. And Nicole will swear him in.
Okay. Can I get you to please stand? If you will raise your right hand, do you have your paper in front of you?
I do.
Okay. So if you will just repeat after me. I.
I, Gregory Shannon.
Have been appointed to the office of board member to the Board of Trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Having been appointed to the office of board member on the Board of Trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of this state.
And the Constitution of this state.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Thank you. Welcome to the board.
Gregory, would you like to tell us a little bit about you?
Thanks. I've been in Nibley now a year, and we moved here from northern Nevada. Very small town. I like small places these days. I spent 40 plus years in business. I've been in sales management. I've owned my own business. I retired from a company as a purchasing agent where we tested vehicles in northern Nevada. About 70% of our business was with the military, and the other 30% was with commercial. And at the time, we've had a number of buses on our site. We tested it for the manufacturers. We tested tires, thousands and thousands of tires. And I was responsible for supplying all the parts, gasoline. We had a 250-head cattle ranch on site. So at one time or another, everything that was purchased for the company was brought across my desk. We had about anywhere from 150 people in northern Nevada up to 220 in government contracts. Seven people in a satellite office outside of Pentagon. So, and I spent 14 years with them. So, now I'm retired. It's time to take all those things I learned over all those years and give back to the community. And I'm looking to do that. Over the past year, being retired, I figured out how much I've really learned over the years and the things that I've done and how it applies. And I'm very grateful for everything that I've learned at this point. And it's really time for me to.
Thank you. We're looking forward to having you with us. All right, now for our presentation, we've got Kim Datweiler is here, and she's from Neighborhood Housing Solutions.
Yes, and if I'd known that you were set up, I would have brought a visual presentation, but that's all right. That's really what I want to talk about is what a difference you're making in the community. I do have some cards for some of you that think you might want.
Permission, I'll just sit.
Yes, that's fine.
You're going to have to lower that microphone for you.
So just take it out.
That's it. I see the air when you're short.
Even just because you're sitting down. That's all.
Holly asked for a little bit of background, so we won't bore you with a lot of details. I've been the director of the organization since 2000. prior to that, I taught housing and financial counseling at Utah State University. I was working on a doctorate there, and this position came open, and it felt like a good fit. And I'm happy to say, after almost 20 years of doing the job, that it's probably the most rewarding thing that I've done. So I feel what you feel. The reason that you're here is because you're making a difference in the community. And you probably don't know just how much that difference makes for the people that we serve. So let me explain a little bit about the individuals that we work with. So all of them make less than 80% of the area median income. And people don't frequently know what that is. Anyone want to guess what 80% of the area median income is now in Cache Valley?
16,000.
Actually, thankfully, it's a little more than that.
Or is it 23? I can't remember. I
should know. 35-ish?
It's actually gone up to, I think, 42.5 is where we are now. I'm sorry, say that. So that's the most anyone that we work with makes, and a lot of them make a lot less than that.
But that's in a family, correct?
Yes, it's generally dual earner households, because the reality is, in our state right now, you can't find affordable housing if you're a single earner household. It's become a huge issue. We've watched rents almost double for some of our clients, and their incomes have not done anything like that. So there, we've seen probably a 100% increase. We were adding up our numbers this year on the calls that we're getting for services that they need. Affordable rental housing, or how do I ever find an affordable house? So we're now seeing 150 to 200 calls a month. The winter tends to be slow. So we can help maybe 70 of them through the various programs that we have. That means there's a lot of people that are out there probably doubled up, living in maybe your basement. How many of you had children that have come back to live in your basement? It's actually becoming a frightening situation. And that's not the Cache Valley that we are used to. So I want you to put yourself in a family situation that maybe they're doing pretty well and they make $35,000. Okay, well, we should have done 36, so we could divide by 12. Take that, and then 30% of that is all you're supposed to spend for your housing. Do you think you could even find an apartment for that now? No. And if they're spending at least 30% of their income on transportation, and that's a very generous low number, we actually tend to see it be closer to 40, even 45%, when you account for repairs to the car, insurance, gasoline, depending on where they work. How are they ever making it? And it's you start to see why we're really grateful to have you as a partner, because if they have to be a dual income household in Cache Valley, that used to mean you had to have two cars. But as you've expanded, you've made it cost one car, which all of a sudden has freed up some income that can now go to that precious rental payment or house payment. You've made it such that some of the mothers of young children can work part-time instead of full-time. And we're talking about the higher income strata. Now I want to give you a very real example of where your partnership with us has made life-altering changes for those that are in the most need. So we have a couple of properties. One of them is in Providence, and it is intended for very low-income people with physical disabilities. Most of these people couldn't drive even if they had the income. And most of them are living on about $600 a month, $600 to $700 a month. Would not be possible except HUD helped with the funding for this project, and so they pay 30% of their income whatever their income is for their housing, including their utilities. But that's only part of the battle, isn't it? They become housebound really quickly. So when we did this project, and I don't know, Todd, I don't know if you were, you might have, do you remember Providence Place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, we came to you and we said, we're going to build this project, and right now there isn't a bus route that's close enough for our residents. Some of them are completely wheelchair bound. You, and I'm saying this in terms of all of you that helped make this happen in the past, changed your bus route so that it now stops directly in front of the property. And then when you saw how much ridership there was, you added a covered
shelter.
Yes, because our residents, some of them can't tolerate the heat and the cold very well, and so they would be huddled out there in our Cache Valley winters waiting for the bus to come. Now they can go out, they sit in the shelter, they get on the bus. They have freedom now. They have a life back. And so you understand what that means. I'm going to tell you an experience that I'm just a grateful recipient, because it's my job to do this. This isn't like a philanthropy kind of thing for me. I love it. But I was in the grocery store, and a woman came up and hugged me that I didn't know. And then she cried a little bit, and she said, "Do you know the difference you've made in my daughter's life?" And I was thinking, I've lost my mind, because I don't think I know you. She recognized my face, because I go to Providence Place and we check on the residents now and then. And her daughter was able to come out of a nursing home and to live in this property. She can now wheel out. She gets on, I think she takes the paratransit bus, but she gets on the bus and she can go. Now think about that. I suspect none of us have a desire to live in a nursing home when we get old. This young woman was doing it from her 20s on, and that was her life. So when you think that maybe the projects you're contemplating are too hard or too expensive, or boy, you're going to take some public heat for it, will you keep that woman in mind and think about the life-altering circumstances that occurred because of a partnership between two small agencies. And I can tell you so many stories, especially from Providence Place. I think there's perhaps two of the 22 residents that have vehicles. The rest of them are relying on you and the goodness of neighbors or friends, family. And the neighborhood has been good to them, but boy, you've made it such that they can get out and feel like they're a part of this community, not just isolated and stuck in. It is beautiful for rental housing, but it's not the same as being able to get out and experience the entire valley. So from our very lowest income strata, where they're living entirely on an SSI or SSDI, to those that are working 2,000 hours to help build their own home, they rely on a bus stop so that they can afford to raise a family, to live a normal life, to be happy, to be stable. So, again, I don't know that you know the extent of the difference that you've made, but it is, in some cases, beyond anything I think any of us could imagine. So I would encourage you to keep doing what you can. We try to build by bus stops, and I should probably tell you, particularly in the multifamily arena, and we do this statewide, so it's not just Cache Valley, but you get additional points if your project is next to a bus stop for very obvious reasons. It, again, makes it more affordable, and because of the green community requirements, it also makes it better for our roads, makes better for our air. So there's a double bonus there, and I'm pretty sure our families aren't thinking about clean air when they think that they only have to walk 3 minutes to get on a bus, and they don't have to own a second car that's constantly breaking down, and they get a stomachache because they can't figure out how they're going to pay to get that thing repaired and running again. So it's not maybe recognized as much as housing, but it is just as important in terms of getting them to where they need to be so that they can be successful in their lives. I don't know if you have any questions. I can tell you a little bit about our agency, just so if you have someone that needs help, you've hopefully got a card. We've got a website, and that really tells you all the programs. But we have everything from down payment assistance with Logan City to the owner builder program that helps people with disabilities, purchase a home. And for people you might know that are struggling, we still have, is creeping up, and I'm afraid this year we will see a pretty big increase in the income required. But people that make half of our median, so half of our half, are still able to participate in homeownership through some of our programs. So it is possible. We'll see what this year brings. But the more that you can do to help us lower transportation costs, the better it will be for all of us.
Carolyn?
How do you play into the refugee assistance programs? Do you see a lot of that you interface with?
We hosted CRIC for a number of years because a lot of the Burmese refugees located in the, there are some affordable apartments right next to our office building. We presented to them. We have yet to convince them that they can actually build a home. And you think about it, how many of you, when I started the program, I thought I was crazy, and my husband, who's a structural engineer, definitely thought I was crazy. But so for us to even think you can build a home is a hard concept. Now, add a language barrier and a cultural barrier, and yeah, so I am happy to report, however, our first Somali family is building currently in Smithfield, and they've already brought two other families that they know in to talk to us about it. So I think we're going to crack that barrier. We're going to show them that it's possible, but it's a hard thing for them to believe. Every time I walk through the homes at the end, I'm still just awed by what those families are able to do. Yes, they spend 35 hours a week until all the homes are done. That's per household. That sounds like a lot, and it is. And some of those families will bring in extra help, mom, dad, aunts, and uncles. We've had some families that have put over 2,000 hours in that building process. And in the end, that reduces their purchase price, and then they get a subsidized interest rate that also benefits them. I think what they mostly get that they don't recognize until later is a sense of accomplishment that changes who they are, because I see them at the beginning. And then I see them at the end. And then I see them a few years later, wherein they're on city council. And, you know, they're running for office, and they're organizing things, and they're making a difference. They've gone from some place where the world seemed to beat them down to I just built 8 homes. Is there anything I can't do if I set my mind to it? So, can't put a price on that.
Do you, is there buses at all your subdivisions that you have, or most of them?
Most of them. We have several in Nibley, and we've got a stop that's pretty close. We are building in Smithfield up on the bench. That one doesn't. One out in Hiram by the high school. I'm not sure where your closest stop is.
I think it's reasonably close, maybe, or one in Hiram?
It's about 3 blocks.
3 blocks, that's reasonably close.
What are the income qualifications for those that want to build?
Making less than 80% of the area median income is the first one, so it's based on family size.
Is there a high that they can't be over a certain amount? Or?
Yeah, they can't be over the 80% benchmark.
Oh, okay.
It depends on how many people are
yes,
in your family.
Yes, exactly. If you have a larger family, the income limit is higher. It's on our website. You can direct them there, or they can just call our office and point out to them that we have worked with people 2 and 3 years to get them eligible. To get them to a point where they've paid off judgments, credit problems, made changes in their lives. We've given them budget counseling, etc. We've got them to a point where now they're eligible and they build. And boy, those stand out in your mind. When they talk about the experience, their experience was 3 years in getting ready and a year in building. By all means, you can refer to us, and we, if we can't help, we will try to help them. But I do have to say that the rental housing right now in the valley is very, very tight. We just hired a new employee, and he's about to be homeless if he sells his home down in Davis County, trying to find someplace up here. And that extends beyond the 80% benchmark. That's something we're experiencing for everyone.
Well, our wages have not kept up.
No, that has been one of the biggest problems is how do we figure out a way to bridge that gap? And I can honestly tell you, there are hard costs, and those costs have gone up. The only variable, honestly, other than getting rid of a child or not buying your medicines that you need, et cetera, is transportation. That is the no-brainer. That is the one that we can solve. If you can help us get them convinced they can live with one car, all of a sudden they can afford a house that they couldn't afford. So by all means, just keep spreading those bus routes out and adding a few more stops. I think I'll close with a story that will also stay with me until I die. This was a woman that didn't live in the, she was Burmese, and she'd come to visit a friend in the apartments by our office. And I happened to be headed that way to a meeting, and she was pushing a stroller with a child. This was in the summer. And then she had a three-year-old, maybe three-and-a-half-year-old, and she was walking, and the child was not happy, and the baby was screaming, and she was sweating. And I thought, I think I should give her a ride if she'll take it. So she got in, and she did. She didn't know about your bus system, so I explained that first of all. She was planning to walk from those apartments on that 95-degree day over to about 7th North and 2nd West. Don't know how long it would have taken her, but I think the three-year-old would have had plenty of meltdowns by then. So anything you can do to also bridge that cultural barrier so they feel comfortable, because there is a bus stop right there, and it would have been so much easier. But boy, just her gratitude and someone caring enough to give her a ride so that she didn't have to spend an hour pulling that little guy along in the heat. Transportation is a huge part of what we need. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Kim. We really appreciate coming and sharing that. Thank you. Roger, do you want to introduce your people?
I certainly can, yes. And Todd and I discussed this a little bit, and I think we talked about it maybe two board meetings ago.
Mm-hmm.
As far as expansion plans for Cache Valley Transit, do we want to just keep doing buses and the paratransit, or do we want to branch out a little bit and do something a little different? And even Mayor Holly Bates suggested and thought, well, maybe bicycles. We're in town at one time. So we have two staff people that are involved in transportation of low-income, older adults, people with disabilities, and I thought they might share a little bit, and funding is always difficult for those services. So we have Zach Covington. Are you going to start? And then Deborah Smith. So,
sure.
Let's hear a little bit about the small program.
Yeah. I've been sitting all day, so I'm going to stand up for a minute, if that's okay. So my name is Zach Covington. I'm a regional planner at Bragg, Roger mentioned. And I'm also kind of been involved in mobility management planning, so I'm the regional mobility manager as well. Todd's been on our regional coordinating council, Access and Mobility Council, for a number of years. And I think we started back in 2009. 2009, we started doing mobility management. And mobility management is essentially human service transportation coordination. So mostly transportation coordination for persons with disabilities, seniors, and low-income households. And we've done a number of studies over those years, including a business plan we did in 2012, where we had a consultant come in and do pretty extensive analysis of mobility issues and needs in Box Elder, Cache, and Rich counties. And the biggest need that we found year after year is the need for access to medical services, mostly for people in rural areas, people that are outside of fixed route or paratransit boundaries, outside of the CVTD or in Box Elder County, outside of the UTA areas. And really, we've tried to find solutions to this problem. We've tried to coordinate services among agencies. We've tried to even see if people would be willing to provide trips in their vehicles. There's been a few startups where people have had paratransit-type vehicles on the private sector and actually tried to provide medical trips. And it's been too expensive, and it's been too hard to sustain long-term financially. And so they've either just quit or moved on down to Ogden or somewhere else on the Wasatch Front because there's just not enough of a market here to do that and on the private side. So the solution that we found was a voucher program, and we called it the Medical Voucher Program, MVP. And we had enough funding through the Federal Transit Administration when we started back in 2014 to provide services vouchers for around 25 clients. And essentially the program really consists of having a pool of money that goes directly to the vouchers and a pool of money that goes to staff for administering the program. And essentially, just to give you an idea, we had $10,000 that first year for just the vouchers. And we had $10,000 for the staff time and administration to set up the program and run the program. We've had this program going since 2014. We've had a couple different funding sources. If you look at the bottom left of your flyer there, you can see we've had Federal Transit Administration funds. We had a year of private funds from Schreiber and Wells Fargo. We asked them for a little money to help us keep it going. And most recently, the state Aging Services actually provided a one-year grant for us and four other associations of governments in the state to continue this program. And it's been pretty successful. I think we've found that it's something that these clients need, something they utilize. It helps them get to medical trips within Cache Valley if they live outside of the CVTD area. And it also helps them to get down to the Wasatch Front for cancer treatment, veteran services, other things if they need to go outside of Cache Valley. So it's been very successful in that way. In a minute, I'm going to ask Deborah if she'll just talk a little bit about some of the clients and how it's helped those clients and some of the needs. UTA actually started a program 2 years ago based on ours. They liked it. They felt like they had a similar need down along the Wasatch Front. So they've been actually using federal funds since they're a direct recipient of Federal Transit Administration funds. They were able to figure out a way to utilize those. In rural areas, we haven't been allowed to. There's been some issues between UDOT and FTA on whether or not we could use those. And so UTA's been successful. They've done it for a couple of years. They essentially go through different agencies, aging services, or senior centers, or other programs that serve persons with disabilities. They've kind of looked to them to be liaisons to clients, to reach out and see where the clients are, to have them do the intake. And then once they're on, UTA just directly reimburses the driver. So without going into too much more detail, essentially our client eligibility is if they have a disability or if they're a senior, they're eligible to apply for the program. And they have to either live outside of the CVTD service area or UTA service area in Box Elder. And in some cases, if they live within the CVTD service area, and they need to go to Salt Lake or somewhere else in the Wasatch Front, then we can also take them on as clients and help them get that funding so they can access those services. Most of the clients ask family, friends, or neighbors to be their driver. We have the clients actually self-select their own driver. We were advised to do that by our insurance provider to kind of reduce liability on our end. And so they select their own driver, and then Bragg actually pays that check directly to the driver. We were doing 35 cents a mile, it's now 40 cents a mile. Approved trip types are medical appointments, pharmacy, treatment centers like cancer treatment centers, testing, screening, lab facilities, checkups. We call it critical nutrition, food pantry, or Bishop Storehouse if they need to get there, or other medical-related trips. Mental health and even drug addiction recovery could be eligible too. We're not stepping into that right now, but other AOGs in the state are going that route. Carbon County in particular is doing a lot for drug treatment through this program. So with that, are there any questions for me before I kind of hand the microphone to Deborah? Go ahead.
Does Bragg, and Roger, maybe you'd have to answer this, but does Bragg have a comprehensive list of services that are available in the community, whether they be medical or otherwise, that your clients can kind of access as they come through?
Sure. Excuse me. We recently put together a list of services and numbers that people serve. 2018, so just
have you might have clients that are coming through that, and maybe you've already thought this through, I'm sure, but that might qualify for things that they may not even realize they're eligible for. Because you have kind of a captured audience of individuals that might be seeking your help.
And so. True. And often that's the utility assistance program or more than 2,000 is served each year. And so often we'll find out what their needs are while they're just applying for utility assistance. And then our staff will share about other resources that we provide or health departments provide. That they're,
do you think as agencies that we're coordinating well enough on those kinds of things? Or do you think that there's an opportunity there to do some?
Yeah, we probably could do better, but I think
in the past, we have worked with the health department and mental health and some others, senior centers, for example. So a lot of those staff members know about our program. But that, you know, that's been a couple of years since we did initial outreach, so that it could be time for us to do more outreach there and try to...
Well, and vice versa. I mean, there may be things that could come to the services that you're providing that other agencies might know about.
That's right.
Excellent. In general, I know Todd and Roger and others have talked to us about the possibility of CBTD eventually looking into doing something like this in the future. In our opinion, after being involved with this for a number of years, it's probably one of the only ways to access and reach out and provide transportation to those more rural areas in a cost-effective way. There's really not a lot of other ways to do it. It costs a lot of money to expand routes and get more vehicles and get more staff and all those things. So this is one very low-cost solution. And it's been neat to see other regions across the state kind of try this out. So if I can ever be a resource or if you have any questions. And again, Todd's been very involved in this from the get-go, so I'm sure he can answer a lot of questions too. But I think I'll just hand the microphone to Deborah and she can talk about clients a little bit.
I kind of want you to for the record, if you would.
They always make me nervous. So. I've had the privilege of being the director of the Senior Companion Program for 10 years at Bragg. I absolutely adore my job. And to answer your question, it's always hard to coordinate things. But I think at Bragg, we have a really good rapport with each other there. And we keep each other informed, whether it's upstairs to downstairs to aging to heating.
It is always an issue, but I think we do a really good job there in terms of keeping each other informed. They'll start at housing, and we get them downstairs in aging, and often many times. So, as the director of the Senior Companion Program, transportation is a huge issue, particularly for the elderly. My group, I have a small group of volunteers, of 23 volunteers. We would do roughly around 78 to 77,000 miles of service every single year between Box Elder, Cache, and Rich counties. These are elderly people about the age of 72 who take on a companion. They're a companion to another elderly person that provides them company, but also we take them to the doctor, the pharmacy. We take them to a number of their errands, banking issue. What people don't understand is if you can keep an elderly person in their home, you are saving tremendous amounts of money for everyone. It costs about $54,000 a year to place a person into a nursing home. Senior companion volunteers, roughly $3,800 a year to provide that service, because if a person can have transportation, that is the one thing that will keep them independent in their home. And for that reason, when I was asked by Roger and Zach if I would help participate in the voucher transportation program, it is a privilege to do that, and I get to see the people on the other end. The lives that are transformed, as was talked about early, although it's one person at a time, it's the starfish thing. It's extremely significant to that one person. Currently, Zach asked me to put 5 people on. I have 7, and I have plans for 7 more. I can't stop, but we just kind of keep adding them on there. But for an example, we have a lady. She's 52 years old. She was going in for chemo treatment when they discovered she has MS, and she also has pancreatitis at this time. And there is two other issues. She has also been diagnosed with diabetes, and she's losing her eyesight. Her young daughter with 3 small children, who is trying to help her mother get to her doctor. She lives in Brigham City, get to her doctor over in Logan. It was a matter of whether mom was going to get treatment or not, because they are both very much below the poverty line. This 40 cents a mile that will be provided to her daughter guarantees that at least we can get them gas to get them there. I have several elderly veterans. I work very close with Deborah Crowther, who does a superb job with her Veterans Administration. She won an award. We're all very proud of that. Yes, I'm very braggy about brag. I don't care. We do a good job there. So Deborah Crowther works with her veterans. We are now going to be able to get 2 of her gentlemen down to Salt Lake for their veteran care. They don't have family. Their children aren't speaking to them. They have no one. But they do have the voucher program, and they are able to find a driver who will be able to at least transport them and bring them back. This is a significant program in keeping people well and also in their home. So I would like to say, for those of us who get to see the faces and meet the people and hear the stories of the impact, it's not a little thing. This is a tremendous way to help people continue to get the personal care that they need and to provide a life for them. We also recently have placed 3 people on with kidney dialysis, and that's 3 times a week. That gets pretty expensive. So with that, the voucher program, Zach has been supporting, writing grants for, and keeping going. I feel very privileged that I've been a part of it. So thank you very much for letting us come to speak tonight, and I appreciate your time. Do you have any questions?
I do.
Yes, please.
How does a voucher holder use their voucher?
Thank you. I go and I interview the person who needs the ride, and I set her up, and then what she does is she picks out her driver, as Zach said. For the insurance reasons, we feel that that's best, and in today's world, that is the correct way to go about things. Then what we do is we come back, the vouchers, it looks like a sheet of paper, the driver's name, phone number, address, the trip, where they went, what they came back for, where they're taking them, was it pharmaceutical, cancer treatment, dialysis, it's specified out, their mileage, then they sign it, and then they mail it back into Bragg. Florence is the person who processes that, and then a check is cut and sent directly to the driver. The vouchers are sent to the person. Say, I'm the person that needs the medical trip. I send we Bragg send vouchers to that person, and she gives them to
several drivers. It could be more than one driver, and then they'll get a check from us once a month. They turn those in before the 5th of every month. If there is anyone that you are aware of in need, please have them call and ask for the medical voucher program, because we are currently putting people on, and we would be more than glad to talk with them. And I can go to their home. If they can't come into BRAC, that's very easy for me to do. We're as far as Tremont, Brigham City, Logan, and also Rich Counties. Okay.
How do you determine how many vouchers they receive?
That can determine how many times they're going. For a kidney dialysis person, the blank voucher would be 3 times a week, so we would calculate maybe 2 weeks' worth would be 6 vouchers. But with some of these people, they need to get to the pharmacy. There's another trip. So every day is a different, you would fill out the voucher for every day. You may make several trips in one day, and that will go all on one voucher, say on Tuesday. But on Wednesday, you fill out another separate voucher. So depending on how often you have to go. So it can depend on how debilitating their illness is, or what their treatments require, or how far they have to go. One of the things is when you get a client who starts sobbing because they're now going to get to go to Huntsman Institute, it's pretty humbling.
So you will determine their entire treatment course, or do you do this on a monthly basis?
Well, we guess.
Okay.
It's always a guessing game with those people with terminal illnesses or with people who are experiencing dialysis. You guess. Zach and I have sat down and talked about, because I have worked so much with senior companions and mileage was always the most difficult part, I can pretty much guess that this person that needs eye treatment, shots in their eyes in Salt Lake once a month, isn't going to need as much money as someone who has dialysis 3 times a week all month long. And so we kind of gauge, but it's fluid. We also talked about with Zach, who has been superb on this, that I would like to make sure we don't add too many people, but just enough so that we can utilize the money, but to also be able to keep the people for as long as possible so we don't get mid-year and have to drop people due to incomes.
Running out of money.
Running out of money. Thank you. And running out of thoughts. Okay, then.
Okay.
Any other questions?
It's that microphone.
I do much better without them. I just do. I'm not sure why. Stage fright, maybe. Did you have a question? Okay. Any other questions? Thank you so much for your time. And this is good information for you to have about the voucher program, because you may have someone in your church affiliation, a neighbor, a friend, a family member that could utilize it. So.
Can I just speak to this for one quick second? So back to Lloyd's question about coordinating services. From a transportation standpoint, we've had multiple consultants over the years. When I say we, was that BRAC-funded project? It was part of the mobility thing. When mobility started all those years ago, that was the first thing, is to look at, are there things where we're duplicating transportation? And what they found when they came up and did the study is we're actually doing it very efficiently. All these different people that are agencies that are doing the transportation, there are different client needs. And so we're actually doing it very, very well. And they have done well not to ask for anything. But what we're looking at is, not tonight by any means, but at some point I think we're going to sit down and see, you know, they're looking for some funding, and we'll come back to the board with maybe a recommendation of what we could do. But this is something that is one of those things that's not buses going down the road, what we've typically thought of as Cache Valley Transit, right? This might be one of those opportunities where we can have an impact, provide transportation, but not in the way that we have done in the past. And so that's why we wanted them to come and bring that to you. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like this discussion. I mean, when I ask the question, it's really more, I have ideas that start thinking. I think, oh, now what if we did this and this and this? Yep. I think one of the responsibilities that we have as a board, particularly in one of the most vital things we have, is getting from point A to point B, and that's what we're in the business of doing, but being a client advocate for those individuals. And I think that there's opportunities with services that are available that we may not even realize that some of these people might be able to have access to.
For sure.
If we just coordinate a little bit better.
I agree. I think that's, you're exactly right. So we'll at some point come back with some maybe some recommendations, but I think you're right. That's a big part of that is that we're coordinating and thinking about the clients first and foremost.
And if I could add one last comment, thank you for recognizing the strong need, because I cannot emphasize enough transportation changes everything for an individual. Isolation, their ability to remain at home. I'm speaking in terms of elderly and disabled. But when you begin your process, I would like to put a suggestion out for you that you look at those someone who can come direct someone who can come directly to the door, take them and take them back, because there are so many disabled people who can't get down their front stairs without some assistance or get back up. That doesn't just pertain to our 80-year-olds, but our 80-year-olds who are blind and deaf, and we have disabled people who are 18 years old. They're a young group. But when talking about that, general transportation is great, but sometimes getting to a point where they can get the transportation is as difficult as not having any transportation at all. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming and sharing with us. Roger, did you want to add anything?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Thank you all. I guess we'll move on to number 9, Transit Basics 101.
So this is something that we're going to turn the time over to Tyler Wilkinson, who's our compliance services supervisor, and he's going to lead you through this. But this is something that we're going to probably try to do from time to time with the board is talk to you about some of the principles and experience that we use when we're looking at route planning or when we're looking at various things that we're trying to do. And Tyler will do this much better than me. But this is, we want to bring staff that are involved in doing this. And so with that, we'll turn it over to Tyler.
All right. Like Todd said, my name is Tyler Wilkinson. I am the compliance services supervisor at Cache Valley Transit. While that's brightening up a little bit, I started out as a driver 10 years ago when I was going to school, and then I transitioned into dispatch and then transitioned into doing supervisor. And specifically, I oversee the paratransit system as far as eligibility and compliance and all those things. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to stand back there so that I don't have to turn around at you. So do yourselves a favor and look at the screen, not me. It's going to be much more pleasant than looking at me. Like Todd said, we wanted to just go over some of the basics of how we look at transportation and how transit can impact that or be a part of transportation. Before we do that, I just kind of wanted to do a little bit of a highlight here. When we're looking at a project or a task or something that we want to accomplish or something, even just an ideology about something or a theory or an idea, there's never a single access to what the complete truth is or to have a sole understanding. No one person or one entity can have solid understanding about something. There are always going to be other perspectives, and those perspectives may not be any more or less true than a perspective that another group has or that we have. They just are often incomplete because they're just narrow-sighted, or maybe not even narrow-sighted, but just unaware. And narrow-sighted kind of puts a negative connotation on it. The most important part is when you have those different perspectives, you want to try to look at them on a whole if you can, or find them and understand them so that you can have a level of balance, so to speak, in trying to balance all of those things. So that's just kind of a general idea to kind of keep in mind as we talk about the difference between transportation and as a whole and how transit can impact that. So with respect to transportation itself, these are some popular forms of transportation. Some of them are specific to here, some of them are not, but there's personal car, rail. We're involved in the fixed route bus and paratransit service. Then there's the shuttle or taxi, and that we included the Salt Lake Express and Uber and Lyft. Then there's the things like bicycles or scooters, and then there's just general walking. Now, there are some of these that aren't even available to some people that we've heard a lot about tonight, and some of them are better than others, depending on what the needs are and what your perspective is, really. And so what we're focusing on now is, like it's kind of been brought up, Cache Valley Transit District has been primarily transit. And that's just a form, one of the many forms of transportation. So in transit specifically, there are different passenger types, two of which are transit-dependent passengers, and then another one is choice passengers. So what I would like to say just before we move on to some of the specifics of this is it is very rare that someone will always be transit-dependent or always be a choice passenger. Just a quick example, my mother has always had a car. She doesn't ride the bus regularly, but every once in a while when she's had to take her car when it broke down, she rode the bus. And she figured out how it worked because at that moment she was transit dependent. So it can fluctuate. It's not necessarily, there are socioeconomic impact or factors that go into that delineation, but it's not always the same all the time for every person. It's fluid. So some of the perspectives with respect to what their needs and desires and expectations are for transit in providing transportation is they need the system, if they're transit dependent, they just need the system to operate to all the possible destinations that they might have to go to because they don't have any other option. Whereas choice passengers really don't care about a lot of the destinations, they just want it to go to the ones that they want to go to right then. And really avoid the unnecessary trips, or the unnecessary route, or the circuitous path. Apparently my eyes are getting older because I can't see that unless I do this. So I'm gonna turn a little bit. Transit-dependent passengers, they need the system to operate over a large span of hours. Again, a lot of times, like, I just received a text from my wife saying we're out of ibuprofen and she has a headache, so I'm going to be picking some up on my way home. If it were 2 hours later, there's no way for me to get there unless I want to walk or ride my bike, or they don't make scooters that hold me up, so I can't ride my scooter. So there's limited options on that. And then there are choice passengers that only need it at, or want it even, at specific times. Some of those specific times can be outside of the large span of hours. There may not be very many people that need a bus all the time going to just general places, but we do get a lot of questions about going up to sporting events or things like that up on university campus. Transit-dependent passengers, they are okay with transfers and long trips. Again, they don't really have any other choice, so they do it because that's what's available and that's what they have to do. Whereas if we want to help with transportation for travel, for choice passengers, then the travel time needs to be pretty similar to it would be in their car. Transit-dependent passengers will fit their schedule around public transit. Again, they don't really have any choice. They'll go on it because that's their option. Whereas the choice passengers, it needs to fit their schedule. If they're going to choose to drive versus take the bus, then it better be about the same amount of time and it better be when they need to go, because 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes of waiting could be the factor that prevents them from using the service. For transit-dependent passengers, they're pretty much going to figure out how to use the system. They're going to take the effort. They're going to find the maps. They're going to go and talk to somebody. They're going to learn it because they don't have any other option. Whereas people that are choice passengers, if it seems confusing or it's hard to figure it out or there's no real easy access to the information, they're not going to use the system because they're not going to take the time to figure it out. Again, back to my mom, the only reason that she's willing to get on the bus is because I can tell her where to go. and she's willing to ask me, but she doesn't know where to look sometimes for other information. So that's one of those things we want to look at. And then for both sides, it needs to be reliable. Whatever that level of service is that's been established, it needs to be reliable to that established level. Whatever that is, for both groups. And then it needs to be safe across the board no matter what. So this is just kind of a visualization of the different perspectives. The transit-dependent passengers, they're okay going around turns and taking a circuitous path to get to their end destination, whereas choice passengers may not be. And I should have clarified, a choice passenger is not a passenger that we would prefer, like their choice. It's more of that they're choosing to ride, not because they have to ride. If that wasn't clear earlier, I apologize. And ultimately, it comes down to if you want to be in transit, it's generally going to be more heavy to the transit-dependent side. But if you want to get into the transportation side of things and being good as far as transportation goes, there is a balance that can be met. Yeah?
Do you know the percentage of our area where they would fit in terms of dependent versus choice?
I don't. Maybe Todd does.
Can I?
Sure.
I'll try to weigh in on that. So we do the short-range transit plan every 5 years. Back when Nielsen Nygaard did their plan, it was really about 50-50, and our ridership was really growing, but we really didn't. And back then, Nielsen Nygaard, if you go back and read that plan, they said, look, now's the time you've got to invest in making it more frequent. You've got this base coverage that's in place, what Tyler's talking about, but you got to invest. We didn't do that, and so now it's slipping back to where it's probably getting a little bit more around that 60-40 or maybe even just a little bit less of it's to more of transit-dependent. The folks that are choice riders are saying, yeah, gas prices is cheap, car loans are cheap. You know what? I'm just going to take my car because it's not convenient.
Correct me if I'm wrong, the more that you have the dependent folks, that maybe changes how you plan as you go forward, and maybe that makes it easier in some ways. Is that
Well, that's the challenge. So I mean, that's part of why Tyler's going through this. Go ahead.
Right, and that's exactly what it is. It is going to change, and it will often change season to season, year to year, and that's why a lot of it is not just looking at it as it is currently, but looking as it what it could be in a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and just trying to understand the general perspectives and recognizing that this can shift. Right now it is about 50-50, but it can shift one way or the other. And there can be a balance, but that's always the hardest part, is trying to figure out what that balance is. And the intention of this presentation is to not talk about the planning part of it, more just to get understand that there is that side of it, that there are different groups that have to understand or have to use a service. Again, the highlight there would be the difference between transportation and transit. Again, this is very transit heavy. This is what transit systems look like. And then a transportation base would be providing more across the board transportation look or feel. And this is a pretty rough representation. It's not, there's lots of other factors that go into it when you're looking at that. But those are just the general ideas on making sure you're aware of the perspectives and the looks and the viewpoints that different groups have when they're trying to get around and live their lives just like everybody else. So that's basically everything that I've brought. If there's any other additional questions that I can defer to Todd, that'd be great. Otherwise, I'll try to answer them.
Do you have questions for me? Please ask.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
But I think to the earlier comment, yes, it slips back and forth, but it also, wherever it's standing, makes a difference in the public perception of CVTD as a whole. And also, if we're trying to, you know, if we talk about how we are transit to help clean up the air in Cache Valley, that's more choice than the other way.
Yeah.
And so our conversation has to reflect what we want the transit district to be in terms of those perspectives. And I think that's something that we often want to be everything for everybody, but we may have to give up some of one or the other and part of that conversation in order to maximize being who we want to be. Does that make sense?
I think it was very well said. And to this board, I think this is why we wanted to talk about that, is just what Jeannie said. As you are visionary in providing direction, if you can provide that direction clearly to us, then we can come to you with proposals that meet that clear path. If that path changes year to year, it's really hard for us to drive to a proposal that's not going to change. And so we have to be wise with our investment, because I think you're exactly right, Jeannie. The dollars we have are very few. And so when we're looking at these plans, as Tyler's saying, 1, 3, 5 years, we're hoping that we're driving down a path that's not going to change.
Well, and it's difficult to balance community perspective with meeting real needs, as we've heard today, and helping the environment that is Cache Valley. I mean, those are three very separate paths, so to speak. And so we have to be able to figure out which path is the most, meets the most of our needs and meets the, you know, makes our hearts beat warmly or whatever it is. And, you know, I've always said it comes down to ridership or scope. You know, are we in, is it this, the path, the everywhere, or is it getting a lot of people on the bus because you're doing something else? You're cleaning up the air, or you're, you know, making the roads so they don't have to be improved and improved and widened and improved.
Yeah, Todd, it was pretty clear tonight with these visitors we had that the main, one of the main objectives of this transit district is to meet the needs of the disabled and the elderly. And it was very clear that that is what they're doing and that they need us.
I think, Jeff, that's a very important point to consider. And then again, it comes back to if that's really the main focus, and that if the main focus is something different, if the main focus is something different of we need to get more people on the bus to improve air quality, then we can design around that. So I think that's why I was so excited about the board meeting tonight. We've had a lot of great things for you to all think about, and we're going to continue to have great discussion, I know, and then figure it out, right?
Yeah, right up until you get a new board and they want to figure it out differently.
Figure it out again.
Okay, anything else? Anybody got any? Cecilia?
I was at a city planning meeting in Idaho Falls. We've got some property that's being affected by the airport and some things going on, but it was really interesting to hear that conversation. Idaho Falls is much bigger than us. It spread out, you know, many of you are probably aware of how it's just pockets here. Their main thing was this, the negatives that are happening because of lack of mass transportation and the lack of planning to move people to point A and B, and the lack of services. And, you know, they had all these big displays around those. I went around Wipsha knowing that I was from Logan, Deception, knowing that I was from Logan. They pointed out that the quality of our life is so affected by our bus system, and so many of them have students that are at Utah State simply because of that, or they have, you know, other family members.
But they're kind of choice riders.
Yeah, they are exactly choice riders, and I'm hoping that that is what our investment in, you know, the people that are doing our marketing, that it will pull in, you know, more of the other as well. I'm anxious to see what they roll out around that, but it helped me to really see the value of the vision of this, because they are just sadly, sadly lacking in this, in a city that is much larger than ours.
Thank you. Anything else?
I just mentioned that there's a fun thing that happens to the Aggie basketball games every time. They have a Cache Valley Transit District drive of the game toward the basket when an Aggie makes a spectacular basket going in town. And it's kind of fun, and that brings the name of the district in front of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah, I didn't know they were doing
football too.
We do. Yeah, same.
Stuff with football too.
We do. Yeah, same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And girls basketball, volleyball. So, yeah.
Huh. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Well, we'll move on to my report. There's a conference that a few people have gone to, and I was going to have Jeff. He went last time. We've got some board training money, and I just want to get your input if you think this would be something worthwhile for us to do. So, Jeff, do you want to talk about what you did?
Is it here or over there?
Oh, you're fine there.
Okay.
I went to a training meeting, and it was on outward thinking with your mind. It was very, very good. I know that a couple of you have gone. But what's interesting about it is it starts, they gave you a couple books to read before you went down to it. And then the whole day seminar was about taking the things that you learn in those books and discussing them and understanding them more. And they kind of give you an idea. They're talking about being in this box versus where you're an inward to yourself versus being outward and thinking of others and treating people as people that they gave in the book. Example that they gave in the book that was very powerful to me was a gentleman was laying in his bed. And he was married and he had a little child, and he had an impression when the baby started crying that he ought to get up out of bed and go help. You know, feed the child, change the diaper and everything. But he didn't act on that impression. And by not acting on that impression, he betrayed himself. And what happened is the wife got up and she was a little frustrated, and she went and took care of the baby's needs and everything, and she came back and they were a little upset at each other. But the point is as soon as he got into that box by denying his impression, he became, he betrayed himself. And by betraying yourself, then what you do is you start defending with your actions, even though they may not have been very appropriate. You start being defensive and you start blaming other people. And the way they describe that is by being in that box where you're blaming and you're... what was that word? It's not a good way that. It's not a good way to communicate. And as a board, as we can sit there and look at some of the situations we deal with occasionally, are we looking at that in that situation from inside of a box and trying to defend ourselves by trying to blame the issues that we're seeing on other people? Or are we going to be able to step out of the box and learn how to look at the situation from a perspective of a group and understanding all the different aspects of the other person's opinions and respecting those opinions rather than just blaming them for all the issues. So the whole seminar was about how to get out of this box, how to understand how you get into the box, and how to collaborate, how to respect other people, and it was very, very good training. And I would recommend it. But I don't know if we could do it. It would take a day to do it is the problem. Mm-hmm. It's a course that if it was put on by the institution, it's about $895 a piece. But if you were to do it as a group and had someone else teach it like that that didn't cost them the $1,000 a people to do it. They did it for a very reasonable cost.
Yeah, I spoke with Susan Radwan that's come and done taught us on things before, and she said that she could come and do it. She said she would prefer an 8-hour day, but I didn't know that many of you would have time to put that into it. But she said she could do it in 4 hours.
And this is a different training than what Jeff went to, right?
Oh, is it? Well, yeah it's out of a function of the board.
Yeah, it's a little different training. Yeah. I just didn't want that communication.
Okay. But I was wanting to see if you were interested in it. I thought maybe we could do the 4-hour training and do it on a board night. Or if you would want the full training and get together on a Saturday. What are your thoughts?
Who is this woman?
The 4 hours, yeah.
Who is this person?
Susan Radwan.
Susan's the lady that came and did the original governance training with you.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, I thought that's who it was. Really.
Yeah. But what are your thoughts on that? Would you want to do a 4-hour training during board meeting?
My only hope is that she doesn't break her hats. My only hope is that she doesn't break her hats.
Oh.
And her little helicopter.
But, well, if she's going to do policy governance, she's She's just mine.
What are your thoughts?
I think it would be good to have her do it, just to give us more of an overview of the board governance.
Is it board governance?
She has a question.
What's the topic?
What I've gotten from her is it's showing us how to function together as a board and work together when there's differences of opinion.
Seems to me we're doing that pretty well right now.
Well, right now, we've had a good meeting tonight. I'm really pleased with that.
You're going to teach her?
You're going to have to put on your professor hat. I'm teasing.
But what do you think?
Doesn't she come from like Indianapolis or where's
Michigan?
Michigan?
Michigan.
Yeah,
Grand Rapids area.
So what I'm wondering is if there isn't if we're going to do policy governance, she's the right person.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to do how to function as board, there.
So we'd like to look at some other ones.
Okay.
So we'd like to look at some other ones closer by.
That are, you know, because there are people in Salt Lake that do it.
Okay. But if we can find the right person, would you be willing to, should we do it at a board meeting at night? Would that be good? Okay. Well, then
we can start at 5 and end at 9.
Yeah.
And have dinner.
And dance.
What we saved on airfare.
Yes.
I've got nothing against her, but,
it makes sense to get someone
closer.
It might be,
she is definitely the policy governance person, mm-hmm. So if you want that, I think that's the person you need to bring
in.
Okay. And she'd be glad to leave Grand Rapids about this time of year.
Yeah, probably so. I would. Well, I will check and see what else we can find, and we'll plan on trying to do that as a board meeting.
Susan read
something. Okay, Todd, you're on.
Okay, just real quickly, Cecilia brought up the marketing. So just to give you an update, did you want to talk about the board presentation thing?
Well, I think we're going to wait till next time.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
Thank you. So, but next week, maybe 2 weeks, but here in the next week or two, you should start hearing radio ads, and pretty soon. Yes. So we're going to have it on 610, 92.9. Help me out, Nicole, Jody. 103.9? No.
The
96.7.
It's not
all of the stations. But there's four or five stations. So, but one of the ones that they didn't have was the 610 talk station, and we all kind of gave input, and they said, okay, we'll go back and look at that. So, you should start hearing those soon.
Did they not have 1390 old stations anymore?
They did not. They looked at all the demographics and where people are listening. So this is based on listenership, and again the demographics hitting the different age brackets. So different age brackets listen to different stations. But
when we did that, though, one of the things that we convinced them was, and you're the one that brought it up that one particular station, they're the voting population. And we got their attention that this is the voting population, so we should hit them. And wasn't it KBNU that we went to?
Yeah.
And it was, they didn't want to even touch it. Then all of a sudden, when she brought up the point that, well, that's the voting population, then all of a sudden, now we're hitting the right target audience.
So, like with vendors that we work with, they bring their expertise. And the staff here have that local knowledge, right? And that's what we bring to the table. And so we really appreciate that Rumor's willing to listen. They work with us, and I think our folks have a great local knowledge, and then we leverage their expertise.
PSA just because of the impact on the community?
Yeah, we will do those as well. So that'll be coming. So, yeah. So real quickly, I just want to talk to you. This is page 4 of your packet. I just kind of want to talk to you about this real quick. And I grabbed Norm as he was leaving. That's why I stepped out earlier. To talk to Norm. So you may remember Norm talked about how can we do more community events and things of that nature. So we've come up with a criteria that we think allows us to meet the external relationships part of your policy governance manual. And it gives you a tool to go back to your community and really seek out events that you think in your community meet the criteria and bring this back to us, and we'll have this application process June through July. But then it will allow us to put that in the budget for next year. So, as you look at this, this kind of gives you an outline of how you can go out and seek events that are in your community. Whether you engage that through your council, whether you know people that are doing events. But again, we're looking at events that have some type of major impact. We get requests quite frequently for all sorts of things. What we want to do is make sure that it's something that's impactful when it comes to congestion, transportation, things of that nature.
Like our big family reunion?
Yeah. Probably wouldn't make the cut.
Well, they need to be sponsored. Community events need to come from a city or a county governance structure. The request, correct? It can't.
That would be ideal, Jeannie, if it did. We think that would be better if it was something that the city or council was supporting. But there may be things where, and again, I don't know. I'm just saying there may be an opportunity where that's not the case, and maybe they need to be taken to the council, and the council then look at that.
Well, I didn't mean they had to support it financially, but I would think that it would be appropriate for them to initiate the request.
We would appreciate that. That would make it a lot simpler.
Because then it would be, the community itself would say, yes, this is a community event. It does meet these criteria. And then you don't get inundated by random requests.
Correct.
Like me saying, how about the fireworks?
Yeah. So we wanted to give this to you as a tool to work with your cities in that vein, to go back and take this to the cities and be a resource to them and say, hey, we have this opportunity. Are there things that make sense in the coming year that we should be, as we're putting the budget together, to really kind of budget for that? So we can give you the sheets so that you can fill them out, take them out. But if you need more sheets on this, let me know. We'll get them to you. We can email them or we can print them off. Whatever you need to do.
So have you done Black and White Days and Health Days and Smithfield or whatever?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there's some events where Black and White Days, for example, where we might just make people aware of the bus service that's there, and that might be sufficient. And then there may be some events where we're saying, hey, we want to do something a little bit beyond that. And again, that's where we're trying to give the guide here of what that might be. So for example, Health Days, there was a time where they wanted to do this special thing, but it was really more of a sightseeing tour, and it really wasn't kind of what we look at for this type of thing. There wasn't a set pickup point, set drop-off point. There wasn't a set that was just kind of, well, we think we want to do this. We said, well, you need to formalize that a little bit more. We need to get a little, and so we said, put that back on them and do, and so we said, put that back on them, and hey, let's think about this more and talk to us later, and maybe we can come back. So there's a lot of opportunity there.
It seems like at one point in time someone talked about high school graduations up at the Spectrum, mm-hmm. that would be a good thing for us to look at. So if that were coming from Jeannie's point of view, who would make that request? Would it be a school district making that request? Would they need to go to the city council of their respective schools? The idea being that there were some people that had a hard time getting up to the Spectrum so the bus could loop them up kind of that way and come from the transit rather than the Utah State bus. Rather than a school bus,
to my mind, that should come from the school board.
That would be an okay request from your point of view,
right.
Saying that it's an agency
right.
like that, not just a city request.
Right. What I just want to avoid is for Todd to get requests from Cecilia's family reunion.
We'd fill your buses.
I think that's a great point, though, Sue, is that there are different entities. It doesn't always have to come from a city.
Right.
And we actually are wanting you as a board member to help us even in facilitating that. I mean, to have this as a way for you to be a resource to your community and what makes sense, or to your entity as a school and say what makes sense. And so I think between the board and management and the cities, the other entities, I think we can probably, work through the process.
What about at these sporting events, rather than having 10,000 cars descend on the stadium, could we have remote pickup points and bring buses in rather than cars? Has that been?
Sure. I think we're open to all things. I will tell you, this is going back to perspectives. I want to use what Tyler said because I thought it was really good. So we have a perspective in the populace that the university actually should be paying more to Cache Valley Transit than they are, because, you know, we're providing all this service up to the Utah State. And then we have a perspective in the populace that says, hey, why don't we do this? This would be convenient for me to provide stuff to Aggies, to the Aggie games. And I will tell you, sometimes those compete. I do worry a little bit that if we start providing service to the Aggie games, someone's going to say, well, why isn't Aggie Shuttle doing that? That's nothing to do with Cache Valley Transit. Now, I'm here to say, well, let's have a discussion and work through that. Well, I think that's an opportunity for us to discuss and figure out what the right approach is.
Aggie Shuttle does provide some of that.
They do.
You can park far away from the stadium and they'll pick you up.
But I think it's a great example of where there's different perspectives in the community, right. and how do we find the compromise or the right situation. And so I think it's a great thing to discuss.
Well, a number of years ago, we could get on the bus at the mall. Go to a basketball game, and that was very nice. Without having to fight all the traffic and parking up there, and that disappeared. But now, the basketball games are not an issue because you can go into the stadium and ride the bus up.
Yeah.
But that was really nice, getting on the bus at the mall and parking there. And
the one other thing that I will tell you, I think we put that in here. I want to say. But anyway, one of the things that makes it like the pumpkin walk so successful is that the city of North Logan has determined that they're going to give priority to the buses. So we pick up there at the Cache Valley Hospital, and then the bus goes. And when it gets to, 8th East there, the traffic is stopped by the police department. The buses go through. And so now it's just as convenient or more convenient than a car because you can get right there. So years ago, I had someone approach me about doing the fireworks. Hey, you should run from the fireworks down to the mall. And I said, will you give us a dedicated lane so that we can run right down to the mall so that we can bypass all the traffic? Well, no, we can't do that. And I'm like, well, then instead of just being in the car stuck in the middle of the road with your family, you're now stuck in the road with 80 strangers. Not an effective thing, right? So I think that's part of it, too, is how do we make this so that using the bus is actually more convenient than walking or driving my car. And I think that's an important thing as we're looking at these community type events.
For us choice riders.
Correct.
There might be less fights if you're in with strangers in your family.
Here we go, write that
down. One of the things, I mean, we talk about choice riders, but I think you have one of the things that communities start to accept when it's, like you talk about the pumpkin walk, we actually turn that street into a one-way street during that same time. And we have law enforcement involved in it. But the community starts to accept it, and they are so supportive of that process that we don't get complaints. Well, I'm not in that situation. I didn't hear complaints about that kind of thing. It was more like, hey, it's the pumpkin walk. This is time to plan to, work around.
Well, and you also see those events like the Pumpkin Walk Summerfest and the fair, that's when we truly get people that, again, when we do the surveying of voters, they said, yeah, I ride once or twice a year. That's what they're talking about, these special events where they're saying, not only do I support it, I'm actually going to use that service then because it is so convenient for me. Yeah. That's all I have.
Is that it? Any other questions? Comments? I think we'll adjourn then. Huh? One more. There, go, Roger. You broke it in now.